With this bill, we face no less than the specter of a sign posted on the federal courthouse door which reads, "You may not seek equal protection here."
There's also nice things about a festival that happens in Olympia that make it really special. It's a small town. When it's overrun with 500 to 1,000 festival goers, it feels like the whole town is taken over by those people.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The U.S. House votes to protect marriage, Labor's gay mastermind is politically resurrected, and arts and activism align at Homo Agogo. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinger.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 24, 2004.
With this bill, we face no less than the specter of a sign posted on the federal courthouse door which reads, "You may not defend your constitutional rights in this court. You may not seek equal protection here. You may not petition your government for redress here." Today, the you is gay and lesbian American citizens, but who will be next?
Despite that warning from openly lesbian U.S. Congressmember Tammy Baldwin, a Wisconsin Democrat, the U.S. House of Representatives this week approved the so-called Marriage Protection Act, a bill to prohibit federal courts from considering constitutional challenges to state laws denying legal recognition to same-gender marriages. The move reflects conservative fears that the 1996 so-called Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, which in part authorizes the states to refuse to recognize another state's legal same-gender marriages, might be struck down as violating the U.S. Constitution. The 54% majority for the current Marriage Protection Act, or MPA, came in a largely party-line vote, but some 13% of Democrats joined most Republicans in support, and about 7% of Republicans and an independent joined most Democrats in opposition.
Republican President George W. Bush apparently supports the measure, although, like some religious right activists, he appears to view it as a stopgap until the U.S. Constitution can be amended against marriages of gay and lesbian couples. That proposed federal marriage amendment was killed by a Senate procedural vote last week, and supporters of marriage equality took heart that the House majority for the Marriage Protection Act fell well short of the two-thirds supermajority a constitutional amendment would require. The Senate will not immediately take up the MPA, as the legislature now begins a six-week recess, and some doubt the MPA will reach the Senate floor this year.
Leading the charge for the MPA was Wisconsin Republican and House Judiciary Committee Chair James Sensenbrenner.
A lot of people will also argue against this bill, saying that the danger is not there. I'm here to say that the danger is real. Just 2 days ago, a lesbian couple married in Massachusetts filed the first lawsuit in a Florida federal court to set federal precedent and to strike down DOMA's protection that allows states not to recognize same-sex marriages license issued in Massachusetts. The threat that is posed to traditional marriage by a handful of federal judges whose decisions can have an impact across state boundaries has renewed concern about abuse of power by the federal judiciary. Integral to the American constitutional system is each branch of government's responsibility to use its powers to prevent overreaching by the other branches.
Yet the bill's opponents insisted that it's the MPA itself that's overreaching. As American Civil Liberties Union spokesperson Christopher Anders succinctly put it, last week the Senate rejected amending the Constitution, but today the House voted to violate it. He referred to both the constitutional principle of separation of powers and the constitutional right to equal protection under the law. The nonpartisan Congressional Research Service reported that we are not aware of any precedent for a law that would deny the inferior federal court's original jurisdiction or the Supreme Court of appellate jurisdiction to review the constitutionality of a law of Congress. And that was part of the opposition expressed by openly gay Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank.
There is no case in American history of this language, you cannot decide any question pertaining to the validity under the Constitution. This is the first time we have said, not that it won't be litigated, but it won't be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. What you're doing here, you're not repealing anything except the Constitution by going back to the Articles of Confederation.
Frank's biggest fear was that prohibiting federal judicial review would become routine.
Once you establish this as the way you show your fealty to a principle, it will be demanded with regard to everything else. This will become boilerplate. And so on issue after issue, we will pass legislation and we will say, but it cannot be questioned by the Supreme Court.
Also on the House floor, declaring marriage to be under attack, numerous Republicans repeated their now standard rhetoric against activist judges. Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern noted that they made no such complaints when a bare majority of the Supreme Court blocked the 2000 Florida recount to give Bush the presidency. And Frank mocked them, saying,
"The court's presumably made up of aliens that you've appointed in many cases."
And in fact, Republican judicial appointees include 6 of the 7 members of the highest court in his home state of Massachusetts who've been so much maligned for finding that state's constitution requires marriage equality for same-gender couples. The lone openly gay Republican congressmember, Arizonan Jim Colby, voted against the bill, although he did not speak on the floor. And off the floor, former Republican Congressmember for Georgia, Bob Barr, a staunch conservative who was DOMA's lead sponsor, told a national meeting of state lawmakers that MPA is dangerous and repeated his equally strong opposition to the federal marriage amendment.
But there was no DOMA-like rider as the House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved annual federal funding for the city of Washington, D.C. Virginia Republican Joanne Davis had previously introduced a bill to stop the capital city from recognizing or creating legal same-gender marriages. And similar language was expected to become a condition of Washington receiving the federal funds that make up the bulk of its income. But because House Majority Leader Tom DeLay wanted energies focused on the MPA and federal marriage amendment, he asked congressional Republicans to leave the issue out of the city's appropriations. For a decade, Congress used a rider to block the city's domestic partnership ordinance, only letting it go into effect 2 years ago.
Openly gay politicians made headlines in other nations this week as well. In Canada, Scott Bryson became the first ever openly gay national cabinet minister as he was sworn in to head Public Works. After a failed run for leadership of the Conservative Party, the Member of Parliament for Nova Scotia switched his allegiance to the ruling Liberals in December and was quickly given a post as a parliamentary secretary. His King's Hants constituency were apparently unaffected by his change of party, giving him an easy victory in the recent elections. In his new role, the former investment banker will manage 14,000 employees and 40,000 contracts worth $10 billion Canadian dollars per year.
The gay man who was forced to resign from the British cabinet not once but twice is back in a high-profile political role once more. Peter Mandelson, generally credited as the architect of the ruling Labour Party's success in 1997 and since, will be the UK's new European Commissioner. Britain is being reduced from 2 European commissioners to 1, with the expansion of the European Union to 25 nations. Mandelson's appointment this week by Prime Minister Tony Blair was not universally welcomed even within the Labour Party, but it ended speculation he would be given yet another cabinet post. First a cabinet minister without portfolio in 1997, following the Labour landslide that ended a long Tory reign. In 1998, Mandelson was given the prestigious role of Secretary of State for Trade and Industry. He had to leave that post that same year in a scandal over a home loan he'd accepted from another politician that appeared to create a conflict of interest. Blair brought him back as Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in 1999. But in 2001, Mandelson was again forced to resign in another scandal as he appeared to have influenced passport processing for a wealthy family. Mandelson still believes he was treated unfairly, but reportedly, opposition within the party blocked another return to the cabinet this year. Blair said, "We need the very best person representing Britain in Europe, and Peter Mandelson has the skills, ability, and contacts in Europe to make a great success of it." Mandelson expressed enthusiasm for the new work he's expected to begin November 1st.
And there was quite a stir in Germany as the leader of a small conservative opposition party was outed, more or less voluntarily. The Free Democrats' Guido Westerwelle last week took Michael Bronze with him to a big birthday bash for the leader of the largest opposition party, the anti-gay Christian Democrats. This week, the two were shown in a front-page photo in the tabloid Bild with the banner, "Westerwelle loves this man." Bild presented the men as partners, including details such as vacations they took together. All Westerwelle would tell reporters seeking confirmation was, "I am living my own life and I won't say anything more about it." Westerwelle is said to be hoping to be Germany's foreign minister if conservatives win the next federal elections. There's even speculation that the outing is a ploy to soften his image as a welfare opponent. And that might lead one to join in asking, as Bild did in pink lettering, "How gay is Germany?" Curiously, news reports that recalled the relatively recent comings out of Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit and Hamburg Mayor Ole von Beust seem to have forgotten the Green Party's openly gay parliamentary justice spokesperson and longtime activist, Volker Beck.
And finally, Queen Elizabeth's official proxy in Australia, Governor General Michael Jeffrey, spoke this week to a crowd of hundreds at a family expo in Brisbane, organized by the Family Council of Queensland. He was interrupted when gay activists Jeff Poole and Jeff Cheverton unrolled a banner and kissed, eliciting gasps from the conservative crowd. Poole told the Australian Associated Press that he wanted to bear witness that the family is not owned by religious fundamentalists. But Cheverton added, "If the Governor General is the Queen's representative in Australia, he did not do a very good job of representing Queens today."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 24th, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Dean Elzinga.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Hi, my name is Billy Bean, and I was a Major League Baseball player from 1986 to 1995. I started with the Detroit Tigers. I played for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. I am gay, and you're listening to a show that hits it out of the park every week. This Way Out Radio Magazine.
Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you.
To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain,
or for audio cassette subscription information,
please visit our website at thiswayout.org,
email us at tworadio@aol.com,
or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA.
Thanks to all Alternabid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out.
Look for the This Way Out auction area at alternabid.com.
This song's going out to Marcy's new girlfriend, Amanda. Waiting for Marcy at home in Portland. It's when the obvious turns dumb and clear.
Very soon, hundreds of queer underground music and film fans will be wending their way to Olympia, Washington for the biennial Homo Agogo Festival. Olympia earned its indie music bragging rights in the 1980s and 90s when such homegrown record labels as K, Kill Rock Stars, Chainsaw, and Yo-Yo promoted queer rock bands like Team Dresch and The Need. Then came Olympia's historic International Pop Underground Convention, the independently produced post-apocalyptic transgender sci-fi punk rock opera The Transfused, the first Ladyfest, and the very first Homo Agogo in 2002. The Gossip, Tracy and the Plastics, the Butchies, and Frank will be among the more than 50 performers at this year's Homo Agogo, which will also feature the reunion of Team Dresh, a keynote address by transgendered African-American activist author Imani Henry, and a variety of workshops and presentations. This Way Out correspondent Pat Maley chats with Homo Agogo organizer Ed Varga about this unique event.
Ed, thanks very much for this interview. Can you tell us, what is Homo Agogo?
Homo Agogo is a queer music, art, film, spoken word, activism festival. It takes place in Olympia, Washington. This year's festival is August 3rd through 8th, and we really try to create an alternative to mainstream queer culture and build community through bringing all these great artists and musicians together and bringing people there to see all of them.
This is the second festival? How did you come up with the idea for it?
I booked shows in Minneapolis under the name Homocore Minneapolis from 1995 to 2000. I moved to Olympia in 2000 and worked on some really great projects like the Transfused Rock Opera that was written by The Need and Nomi Lam. I got to work on Yo-Yo Agogo 2001, and also got to do sound for Ladyfest 2000. So, and was just also just really inspired by the people around me in Olympia, and I had always wanted to do something on a larger scale like Homocore Minneapolis, and knew, you know, learned how to do these bigger projects by working on Yo-Yo Agogo and the Transfused, and really wanted to do something that had, that was like Yo-Yo Agogo or Ladyfest, that had more of a queer focus to it.
Homo Agogo, it's infused with a lot of community spirit. Do you think this could happen anywhere else, or do you think it could only happen in Olympia?
Well, it's a good question, because I now live in Los Angeles, but chose to come back to do the festival in Olympia because I felt like it was the best place to have the festival. There's a lot of things about Olympia that make it easy to do there. Capitol Theater is a really great place that I really like working in, and we could definitely can do it at a more affordably than we could in a larger city. There's also nice things about a festival that happens in Olympia that make it really special. It's a small town. When it's overrun with 500 to 1,000 festival goers, it feels like the whole town is taken over by those people, and it creates a large feeling of community and a really festive atmosphere. So I think that it could happen someplace else, but that it would feel a lot different. And right now I like the way that it feels when it happens in Olympia. But I am thinking about having it in another city in 2006. Where I'm considering the possibility. That's not to say that it won't happen in Olympia.
Homo Agogo, there's no corporate sponsorship. Is this on purpose?
I'm not totally anti-corporate sponsorship because it's a really expensive festival to put on. I wouldn't take corporate sponsorship if it wasn't on our own terms. We tried to get some sponsorship from queer magazines. Specifically, we went for more queer-oriented funding sources, and we just couldn't. We haven't had a lot of luck doing it. I think that it's the nature of the festival because it has a very alternative queer aesthetic. It's really has a very anti-capitalism, anti-consumerism message to it, and that's the culture that we try to create around the festival, is one that goes against the queer mainstream, which right now is very classist and consumerist oriented, and that's something we don't want to be. And I think once you take away the idea that I think that corporations will sponsor gay people in this day and age because they see it as a market. And once you take away the idea that people are going to buy a bunch of stuff from you, corporations are less interested in you.
Ungrateful fools! do our best to root it out.
We will not tolerate ingrates.
We will not tolerate it.
We should just shut down the factory.
Ship the whole operation overseas.
Christ, I always thought that place was an eyesore.
We could try out the new virus.
And obliterate the whole goddamn mongrel quarter.
Here's what your language did. There's no reason to respond in fear. This problem has a simple solution. We need to make an example of all.
You know what to do. Do what you have to. You know what to do. Do what you have to. You know what to do. Do what you have to.
I understand you have a secret major label guest planned for Thursday night. Would you consider that sort of corporate sponsorship?
Our special Thursday night guest was an interesting situation where they approached us and offered a donation to play at the festival in exchange for just their expenses. And they're someone who has contributed a great deal to queer music over the years. And we made a decision to book a major label band because we felt like it was a very generous donation. And we really felt like they have a lot to offer and that their hearts were really in the right place.
We got sticks on our piles. We got stories that lead to smiles. We got a twirl with this world.
They're the kind of band that plays for audiences of 50,000, and they're coming to our tiny little festival at the 1,000-capacity Capitol Theater, and it felt like a good thing to do for the festival. It also felt like, to me, it feels good to branch out and have different artists that everybody doesn't all fit into the same aesthetic, and definitely going to bring a lot of different people to that wouldn't come to the rest of the festival, and it's going to expose those people to what we're doing, and they might say, wow, this is a cool thing, and look at all these other great bands that I could see. It'll turn other people on to the festival, and it'll also make our community feel a little broader by bringing different people than our nice little insular little community.
I never thought of Homo Go-Go as being insular. I mean, it is pretty youth-centric, but not exclusionary. I mean, I'm in my 40s, and I felt completely welcome at the last one. And it also seemed to me like it was a pretty great thing that it was so youth-centric, given that there aren't a lot of major events out there for queer youth. Can you tell us a little bit about youth issues and Homo Go-Go?
We have a very queer youth positive environment. I mean, all of our events are all ages, and that's a very conscious decision. And in terms of issues of access to culture, self-determination of your own identity, the larger mission of the festival is to promote that idea that we all have the right to self-identify, and we all have the right to self-identify personally as well as the community we want to be a part of. We have lots of workshops that are open to all, that I think a lot of them are of interest to queer youth. We have instructional workshops this year that relate to music and music skills and vocal skills, and we also just try to create a lot of open space and try to book, you know, artists and musicians that are queer youth. And so we just try to open space for queer youth participation without being overbearing and, you know, do it in a way that's positive.
One of the things that sets Homo Go-Go apart from other queer concerts and events is that you have a lot of workshops. Can you describe some of the workshops that you're doing this year and why it's important to include workshops in a festival?
We feel it's important to include workshops in the festival so that we get a chance to not just watch a band play or listen to some spoken word, that we get to actually like sit around and talk about some real issues, and it gives it just a little bit more of an activist feel. I mean, we also have some hands-on workshops. We have a bike mechanics workshop and a silk screening workshop, and we also have a drumming workshop, a vocal workshop, and I believe a guitar workshop. So we have some kind of hands-on skills-oriented workshops, and it offers a way for people to participate and hopefully empower people to go home and create their own music or create their own shows or something that's lacking in their community or something that they really want to do. Hopefully it will inspire them, either by giving them the skills or just talking to other people and realizing, hey, all these other people are doing these other things, I could do it too.
Ed, can you talk a little bit about the number of people it takes to put on a festival like this?
Well, I don't have exact numbers on how many people it takes to put on this festival, but we have, with the people who also staff the festival, we probably have over 100 people volunteering in various ways.
So you guys are volunteering a lot of your time and effort, and can you tell us where the profit goes to?
Well, after we pay all the bills for the festival, one of the main places that the profit goes to is a local Olympia organization called the Gender Variant Healthcare Project, otherwise known as the GVHP. And they provide referral services for trans and gender variant people in reference to healthcare. And they also provide training and information for healthcare professionals. We were able to give them $6,700 in 2002, which is a pretty significant chunk of money to a small organization like the GVHP that doesn't really get a lot of other funding. It enabled them to set up an office and pay their rent and have a phone line and send some of their members to get some special training. And we really felt like, in terms of community building, and especially in terms of building bridges between the trans community and the larger queer community, that doing something like offering financial support to a group like the GVHP was one of the most important ways that we could not just tack on the T for trans to the end of GLBT, that it was a way for us to really, really say that we are committed to trans issues, and especially because healthcare issues are probably the single biggest issue facing trans people. The other places the money will go, we have sort of a dream that we'll create this queer artist fund where we would be able to take applications for and give small grants to queer artists, you know, just supporting the queer arts that otherwise aren't supported in this country.
Well, it all sounds very exciting, Ed, and I wish you guys the best of luck.
Thanks, Pat.
My guest has been Ed Varga. He's one of the organizers of the Homo Agogo Festival being held in Olympia, Washington this August. If you'd like more information, or if you'd like to contact the folks at Homo Agogo, please visit their website at www.homoagogo.com. For This Way Out, I'm Pat Maley.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, and Pat Maley contributed program material. Thanks also to Lois Maffeo and J.D. Doyle. Team Dresch, the Indigo Girls, and the cast of the original rock opera The Transfused performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Only you can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs in the bargain, too. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2NUR Newcastle, New South Wales, WUSB Stony Brook, New York, KPFT Houston, Texas, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned. Tuned.